is Thrive Perspectives, an ever-growing discussion about the issues and ideas that shape our lives with your guide, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Hi, listeners. Stuart here from Thrive Today. You know, many people tune in to a Thrive podcast every week. We're really encouraged by the feedback we receive on how these podcasts are impacting people's lives in very real ways and equipping them as they grow in their faith. Now, our hope and desire is to continue to make these podcasts available for free. However, there is a very real cost to make this happen. This is where you can help us. If you'd like to contribute to assist us in meeting these ongoing production and distribution costs, then please join our listener support program with a monthly subscription. Now, you can do this very quickly and simply. Just go to thrivetoday.tv. That's our website, thrivetoday, one word, .tv. At the top of the homepage, you'll see a button that says Donate. This will give you the option to support the Thrive podcast with a donation of $5 or $10 or $50 per month. You can set your own support level. So we hope you'll consider supporting this ministry in this way. Again, to those who are monthly supporters, a huge thank you to you. Your contribution is helping us continue to provide these Thrive podcasts for free. So it's easy. Visit thrivetoday.tv, click on the Donate button. We thank you for your support by tuning in, but also by contributing financially in this way. Now let's jump into this episode of Thrive with Matt.
Coffee out of it, anyway.
Well, good morning, Matt. Good morning, Connell. Back in the studio, and I'm pretty excited about this continuation, really, of our last Thrive Perspectives episode, where we're looking as part of our worldview series on, particularly on technology and its impact on relationships and society. Last episode, we sort of talked a bit about where we've come so far and the impact that technology has really already had on society and particularly on human relationships.
Mm.
People are now starting to find it easier to engage in, let's just say, relationships with machines.
Mm.
And where is this all headed going forward? And if you haven't listened to that episode, listeners, I'd really encourage you to go back and have a listen to that before you listen to this one, because we're going to kind of extend on from that. Mm. We're going to talk a bit to our resident tech expert, who will deny all claims to that, Connell, who's going to talk a bit about where we see things heading in the future, as much as we know that for now. And then we're going to talk about how we might respond as Christians to God's model of community and relationships, as opposed to where this seems to be headed. So
that's right. And all this in the context, of course, that we know in broad terms where the future is heading.
Yes.
And, you know, for me, as a Christian, when we navigate through the changes, societal changes, and particularly when those accelerate, we understand the sort of trajectory of history, and there's a sense in Scripture that the world system as such is something that doesn't really work. Like, it's something that in a sense holds the place, like it holds things together.
Yeah.
And even there's a sense in which as Christians we should sow into the peace, the shalom of the city in which we live, to use from the prophet Jeremiah when he's speaking to the exiles. So we should, because that's a good thing, right?
Yes.
Order is a good thing, and even a bad order is better than chaos.
Yeah. And so what you're saying there is, it's not that we should remove ourselves from society as a hermit somewhere in the hills. We actually need to be salt.
That's right. Constructively
engaged
in our culture and you know, doing what we can to bring about flourishing in the midst of all of this. But we do know that this world system in which we live, that we're asked to contribute to in a positive sense, ultimately does come undone in Scripture, in that the human elements of that drive to autonomy and control and all of that sort of comes to a head. This is not a doomsday thing, because at the same time as that is happening, there's this wonderful celebration that the kingdom of God, you know, it's the weeds and the wheat. The weeds come to fruition, but so does the wheat. And so there's a sense of optimism as well. So we can, if our hope is in the kingdom, if we're seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, we're going to be stoked. I mean, it's because that goes really well as we move forwards. But if our hope is in the world system, then, well, it's misplaced hope. And there's, as I said, there's that increased polarization. So you know, as we have this conversation, and I'm glad we are, because this is something that as Christians we need to be reflecting on. We need to be understand where things are, the impact that that has, and even where things are going, and what that means for us. And I'm just mapping this on the sort of biblical framework for a moment, because we're like the Daniels living in Babylon, where, you know, Jeremiah has told us, go, you know, contribute towards the shalom of that city, the peace of that city, and the prosperity, right? But don't get drawn in, be in the world, but not of the world. And so the temptation to get drawn in is always there. And so that's why having the conversation around what's going on and how can we, what does it look like to be distinct? What can we contribute in terms of our values to this? And this is why we're having this conversation.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Before we just hand to Connell, I just want to, you know, you said the temptation to get drawn in. I think we tend to think of temptation as something proactive. You know, we have to be proactive towards a temptation. But the reality is it's so prolific in society today that we actually have to be intentional not to
engage. Right.
It's the flip way around. So, Connell, tell us a little bit about your reflection from last week, and then lead us forward. You know, we covered sort of things right up to, I think, sort of the advent of social media and YouTube and all those sorts of things. And again, we're not having a crack at those particular platforms or technologies at all, but where are things headed forward from here? And, you know, tell us a bit about what you see.
So, of course, as well, like I think a couple of episodes back, we were talking about technology, and it's never technology itself that's a bad thing. I mean, we take every technology, and it doesn't matter whether we go back to the Industrial Revolution or I think we talked about even like farming, you know.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, going right back. That's right. Yeah.
Everything has this other consequence of it, you know. So we talked about putting new farming methods in that mean we didn't have to labor so hard to produce food, and then that changes the way that we kind of function as a society. Like we lose some of that ability to really work, you know, that physical labor and so on. So then our bodies sort of become weaker, and we have different kind of jobs evolve out of. So every time there's a technological shift, there's a consequence. And I think that's the thing that we need to be really alert to. And it's not so much about this particular piece of technology or something that's been released today that's really exciting. I think what we need to do is be awake in terms of the consequences of when technology converges.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing, and this I think will segue to what we're talking about as we reflect on, you know, where things are and where things are going. So the example that we used was the Neolithic kind of turn to a more agrarian sort of society. And actually, the interesting thing about that is that the, you know, historians talk about that as being a sort of unnatural that actually forced us to live in ways that we weren't really built for. So, our bodies weren't really built for that form of labor, you know, and we were living in close proximity with animals in captivity, and that's a very unnatural sort of situation. So a lot of disease came from that. And you know, there's people like Jared Diamond, for example, you know, talk about the effect that then had on the environment. The class system sort of comes out of that, because you've got the working people working in the fields, and then you've got to protect those fields, and so you have your cities and armies and all sorts of things, you know, and so massive changes through this sort of change in lifestyle, which in a sense, as we talk about, you know, technology, I think we're facing, aren't we, the problem of there's a whole lot of ways that we function as humans in relationships and needs, very natural needs that we have, that technology is sort of mediating in a way, but it's completely putting us into a different and a different phase. And I'm interested to know, you know, where that's going. Are we going to be like the people in Wall-E? Did you remember the animated film? It's a Pixar film, and the Earth is so full of rubbish that humans can't live there. So they live in a spaceship, and they're so inactive. Technology does everything, that they just sit in these flying chairs, big like jellyfish, mm-hmm. like big jellyfish, and they can't walk anymore. It's like, yeah. you know, the extreme, yeah. you know, with screens in front of them.
Yes.
And that's a sort of a, I don't know when that film came out, you know, maybe a decade ago, but yep. It's sort of, it's this kind of yep. slightly doomsday picture of where things are going, where yeah. machines pretty much do everything for us and we're just sort of plugged in. Almost to a Matrix like
yeah.
And back situation. Then we would have laughed at that movie yeah. going, not ever. But now you kind of go, well, are we not you know, heading in yeah. that direction?
Well, yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but it yeah. was that in terms of machines doing stuff for us, it was more mechanical machines, was it? Like actual machines? Or did they actually, were they talking about kind of more sort of virtual?
It was more cartoony than that. So there yeah. were shoots. If you ordered a meal, it just came down a chute as you yeah, went, as yeah. your chair went past and into your lap, and that was the meal you ordered.
Right.
And okay. then a screen would come if you wanted to watch a movie, and you just didn't have yeah. to move out of your yeah. cheek, and you got bigger and bigger and bigger. And,
yeah. and so your kids are older, Connell, so yeah. you missed a I'll bit of a that, golden age of
need to look that one up.
Pixar animation, you know, The Incredibles and Wall-E and all of these
yeah,
great
yeah, no, I missed that
animated things. Yeah.
So from the research and stuff I've been doing is and the last few episodes we've been talking about, it's kind of made me dig into it a bit more. And then, and I think it's not a lot coming from the Christian side of commentary about what changes that are happening. It's coming from the non-Christian side yeah. of people actually going, hang on a minute, something fundamental's changing here yeah. and we're getting worried.
Yeah, and people like Mustafa Suleiman, who wrote the book The Coming Wave, who's in that industry. Mm. So he's a key person developing the AI, saying essentially this is really scary and I'm part of it and we can't stop.
Yeah, yeah. And so
as a crude sort of summary of what he sort of says in that yeah. book.
We're not going to stop either, because it's not just what the technology does for us personally, it's what it does for us as a nation. In terms of military, in terms of economic advantage, we simply can't afford to go, well, we don't like the way this is going, so therefore we're going to disengage from it.
Yeah.
Because that would mean we'd be falling behind the rest of the world and opening ourselves up, you know, not even be able to defend ourselves in the yeah. future. So we simply have no option but to embrace it, and not just embrace it, but do so as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part of it, is that there's this huge momentum behind it. There's so much power in this that we have to harness it at every level that we can possibly squeeze it into.
Yeah.
We have to embed it as quickly as possible and make it as powerful as possible, because we can't afford to fall behind.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a good point, Connell. So the thing there is that the background, the thing that provides the impetus, more than the impetus, the compulsion, is this situation of conflict, which is exactly the in the sort of, you know, Neolithic period, its conflict was central to that. You've got to sustain armies, right? Because you've got to protect against those guys. And then it compounds, right?
Yep.
So, and there's ever more conflict then. And then there's, you know, even conflict within, those societies. It's just like,
it's the same.
Dare I suggest, can I use another slightly different word? Because conflict tends to escalate it outside of our day-to-day life. I think competition. If you think about social media, it's all about comparison. Me compared to that guy, that guy compared to me.
That's right.
Yeah, I think it's all really around the whole, did God really say that? You know, it's that whole thing. I can be the comparison thing right at that point. It's like, I want to be like that person, you know?
Yeah.
And at that expands obviously into aggression and war all those sorts of things. But
core to that though is just the need for us to be more powerful, whether that's financially, militarily, whatever. It's all about as humanity wanting to have more power.
Well, it's essentially the God complex.
Yeah.
As Yuval Noah Harari explicitly, I mean, the title of his book is Homo Deus, which it's a drive to have godlike control over our circumstances and environment.
Yeah. So there's a huge amount of impetus, as you say, Matt, driving this. And that's the part that's scary, because the stuff that we do see, and then there's also the stuff that we're not going to see, because it's driven by military. And obviously there's a lot of secret technologies that none of us know about there as well. And so there's a lot of things that's just going to be driving this forward. So,
and we should quickly say, this is not a conspiracy.
No, no.
This is not a conspiracy podcast. This is, you know, universally accepted sort of trajectory.
I know. Even as I'm saying, I'm thinking things a bit conspiracy, but I don't think anyone's naive enough to think the military is completely open and transparent about everything.
Of course. Yeah.
So
there's amazing stuff happening in the private sector. The brain implant stuff, and I mean, that's really interesting.
Yeah. The thing that was of interest to me is that, you know, you can have individual islands of technology. So like when the internet came out, I mean, that was mind blowing how you could jump on to the internet. Mm. And back then there wasn't Google, you know, you had Yahoo and Alta Vista and all these different search engines, and you could put something
Netscape.
In
Netscape.
And it would, Netscape and it would bring back this vast, massive, and it was incredible, you know, and you could sort of plug into that. And as useful as it was kind of in a box. You know, and then the smartphone came along, and when that was adopted, all of a sudden that internet now became a tool in my hand that I could carry around in my pocket, and I could literally just sit there with it in the palm of my hand all the time, consuming the content that was on the internet and being entertained by it. So now, that was actually what drove a change in society. The internet didn't necessarily, it was just a useful tool, but that convergence of the two technologies changed society. Now, there's nobody says the smartphone's bad or the internet's bad, but nobody, I don't think, the change in society that those two things that converged, the result of that is good when we all sit around as families sitting there looking on our phones or out at a restaurant or whatever, and everyone's on their phone. You just look at it. It's absolutely horrific when you actually see the breakdown in human interaction just from that one device. Yeah. So it's restructuring society. Mm. And then so what we're seeing, we've got things like AI that's out there, and we talked about different technologies.
But can I just, before you go on to that sentence, but we're sitting here with our smartphones beside us. So it's not like, I mean, and I love it. You know, it's like I can do anything anywhere. So none of us are saying, well, let's be Luddites and not have
a... You don't have a choice.
Although, can I say self-righteously that I have an iPhone 8. I am the Luddite in this group.
Well, I don't even have an iPhone, so there you go.
Anyway, sorry, go on to AI.
So anyway,
on to the next problem.
So at the moment, we've got a few different technologies sitting out there, and they're kind of in that box state that I was talking about just before. And it's the convergence of them that's the thing that's really interesting. And I think, you know, when we recorded our first episode on this topic a few weeks ago, was just when Apple launched their Vision Pro goggles.
Right.
And, you know, people are going to go, oh, it's just Apple, or Facebook got there first, and so on. But irrelevant. The point is, what we're trying to do now in technology is drive this convergence of AI and augmented reality, which is the blending of the digital world with the physical world, which Apple has probably is the leader in at the moment.
Yeah. So just give us a synopsis of what that technology is.
Yeah. So basically, you know, we've seen it before. You put your goggles on and you've got, you know, kind of screens in front of you.
Yeah.
It lets you basically see into the physical world, but you're layering over that the virtual.
So it's like there's a sheet of glass in front of you. If you didn't have the goggles on, it's like there's a sheet of glass that you can see through, but on that sheet of glass are different windows from your computer.
Okay, so it's different. Yeah, because the whole goggles thing, that's been out for a while, but you're saying this is different.
It's the way that they're blending in. It's a level that they're able to get to. So that
You're looking at the real world through goggles.
But you're not, actually. It's actually got cameras. It's not even filtering. You can look in the room and you think you're looking through your own eyes in the room, but it's actually taking that vision. They've got two 4K screens in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
Super high quality screens. Like that's crazy. And in itself. And then what it's doing is it's creating an image in there that makes it look like you are looking with your own eye. You can't really tell the difference. It's that good and that accurate in terms of how it translates where you're looking and where your eyes are looking and so on. So you're able to blend in and out the real world into your virtual world. Now, in the virtual world, it's kind of like using your smartphone, really, or your laptop, and you're able to bring, you know, like imagine sitting in front of your monitor. You've got your computer screen in front of you. You don't need the screen anymore because literally it just projects itself up in front of you. Yeah. And then you can organize all your apps, you know, off to the side, and you have multiple apps open and all around you, like kind of floating virtually in space. It's all really amazing.
And again,
like,
just to picture this for listeners that haven't seen this technology. So you can potentially, are you saying you can sort of walk around and have these on?
Yeah, you walk around and it's good. People, they've got videos of people driving cars.
And on trains, getting on and off trains.
Even with this, even though they can't physically see the real world, it's just an impression. Like,
but they've got cameras that are
and it's that good at mapping, meshing the two together that you can actually drive a car, you can walk down the street, you can walk up steps without tripping over the steps and so on. It's that good at sort of blending the two things together. And so really what it does is say, well, anything that's not really physical, you probably don't really need anymore because you can just virtualize it in front of you. Mm. Now, the obvious problem with that is you've got to wear goggles and people don't want to wear goggles. But it's not going to take a lot to get it down to some sort of contact lenses, you know, we put in front of it. We've still got technological challenges to get to that point. And then you've got like Elon Musk is talking about getting the neural implants into our brain. So I guess you'd be able to bypass our eyeballs in the first place and actually just plant the images directly in our brain.
Yeah.
But this is the direction.
Which is quite well developed. I mean, that's a long way into development, isn't it?
Supposedly, how well that work. I'd be skeptical how well that would work at the moment, whether you're able to get actual proper clear images.
Mm. At the moment, I don't think there's any images. I think at the moment you can control some device by thinking about things,
but that's more
it's
sort
nothing
of thing.
Visually at this stage.
And that's still
incredible.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you can control the device by thinking about man alive.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the idea
I'd like to control. Anyway,
I'm just thinking
of my family life. But
So if you jump onto YouTube and look up some of the videos on, say Apple Vision Pro, you'll see that there will be people starting to talk about going, this technology is absolutely amazing, but I can see we've got a problem.
It's going to another level.
It's so good at what it does is that one of the video I watched it. A few weeks ago, it came up and I was watching it with other people that had no interest in technology or any of this stuff, and they overheard it. And this one was actually done by Ben Shapiro, and more of a political commentator than a tech reviewer, but he was actually trying the goggles on and, you know, blown away by the technology. But then he actually sat down and talked about it and said, this is as good as it is. I can see this is going to make some major, major changes in how we function as a society. Mm. And so other people overheard it and they're going, oh, gee, this doesn't sound good. And it made sense to people who aren't even from a technology interest going, oh, this doesn't sound good at all. So some of the things that would be changing potentially for us, if we can get past the fact we've got to wear goggles, let's assume we'll solve that problem, because I think that's not a huge problem to solve, given the leaps and bounds that we've made already in the technology, it's the idea really that because the immediacy of information into that's being able to be implanted in front of you, you can and with AI being able to recall stuff sort of like instantly in front of your eyes, that it will change how we work with our brains. So even the idea of intelligence starts to change because we just have to become good at driving the AI technology. Mm. And the AI technology is then predicting stuff for us as we interact in the world. So we just have to actually change the way that we function because it becomes so ingrained. It's like literally like taking all the bad things that we know come from the smartphone and literally just placing it up right in front of our eyes so we can't escape it.
Yeah.
And we're planting it in closer and closer and closer to us, so we literally can't escape it. So we've got this AI, we've got the ability to access information and overlay it with the the physical world and blend the two together. And because of that, we won't really want to even take these things off because it's going to be
we
so
We lose
good.
A whole lot of connectivity.
We'll lose the
connectivity. It's a bit like saying, put your phone away for a day.
Yeah.
Who's going to be able to do that?
You can't. Yeah. You can't let go of these things. So yeah. What it does is it brings it even more immediate to us. Mm. And so the way our brains are going to work, the way that we access information is going to change. Mm. We're going to become more comfortable interacting with each other through this kind of blend of reality.
Just before you move on, I can think of a perfect application for me and probably you too, Matt. Mm. So I put my car keys down somewhere. I can go, hey, play me back where I put my car keys down, and this video plays in front of you. Oh, that's where they are. You know, it's like, seriously. It's like you see this stuff on TV.
That's great. Sold. Yeah. How much is it?
Go on.
And then there's another commenter talking about this, you know, like we've seen already so much anxiety that people are having, especially with young people today, which we kind of probably think is to do with social media and smartphones and things like that. It's another consequence of seeing things and interacting with the world through that kind of medium. So what will happen, because we're actually bringing this technology closer and literally planting it right in front of our eyeballs so that we can't escape it, the ability to escape from the physical world.
From reality, in a sense.
And dwell more into the virtual world, or to dial in the world that you are more comfortable in. So this whole anxiety thing that people are dealing with now today, seemingly more than at other times, is going to fuel more people to get into the technology. Mm. Now, the other thing that's scary about this, you say, well, I don't suffer from that, so it's not going to affect me. I don't need this. But the convenience in the supercharging of our intellect and empowering of us with this kind of technology is going to allow us to do things quicker, faster, get our dopamine hit immediately. It's going to change how we work. I mean, we're going to work in these things. We won't need screens anymore, screens and keyboards. Like literally if you put on
It'll feel archaic at some point.
The screens in front of you, just you can be sitting on a train and you've got like three monitors up in front of you and you've got virtual keyboards that you're able to type on with. And that's, you can do all of that now with these goggles. So you don't need all of this stuff. The laptop goes, everything goes like that. It all becomes virtual.
Yeah.
So I could see quite easily that will be how we will start to interact, certainly, say, in the workplace. The ability to generate an income will require you to put these goggles on.
Or whatever it is by the time we get to that point, whether it's contact lenses or implants or whatever it might be. Yeah.
So
for now, it's the goggles.
It's going to require you to put them on, just the same way as now we can't say, I don't want to use a computer. It's going to cut out the number of jobs you can do. And then if people are interacting and engaging on through this virtual augmented reality, you're going to cut yourself off if you're not willing to put the goggles on, basically. Mm. And the more that we're forced to put the goggles on, the more dependent we become to put the goggles on.
Yeah.
And the more addicted to it we become, just like the smartphone has made us addicted. The more that we can get people onto the goggles, the more we become addicted to this augmented reality. Yeah. And then we start to lose a grasp on what is actually the physical world. Like what is the physical world anymore? We become so dependent on this blended reality this augmented reality. And so, you know, like even I think Ben Shapiro mentioned something about what happens if we're actually faced attack from an enemy. But that happens in the physical world.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, we've just lost our ability. We've actually stopped engaging in the physical world as much as we used to.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all of that's taken away from us, or we've suddenly got to actually now re-engage in a physical. So there's all sorts of consequences of things that comes from our dependence and addiction on what's happening there. And there's a whole lot of things that, you know, some of the more obvious things, but they're talking about, you know, concern over AI is able to fake so much, almost everything, you know, from images to video, to music, to the interactions, to voice, to being able
The creation of deep fakes is just incredible. No idea what's going on anymore.
And so, you know, the best minds are all sitting there thinking about how are we going to deal with this? Because the fake world and the real world are going to become
converging.
Converging, that's right. And are indistinguishable. And we're not really sure how to tell the difference anymore. The obvious answer to that is, we'll produce legislation that requires you to, you know, declare when something's been AI generated. But who honestly believes that's ever going to, there's no way that's going to
work. And that's what Suleiman in his book is arguing, that, you know, legislation is just not going to be able to keep up.
Well, the bad operators are never going to apply. I mean, do people who steal things and drug smuggle worry about legislation?
No.
So the people that are the bad players are going to not be remotely interested in legislation.
Well, if we're going to keep up with the rest of the world, if legislation slows us down, legislation goes by, we'll just push it aside.
Yeah.
You know, it's legislation is not going to be the answer to this problem. And so people are saying, well, maybe we have AI should be able to detect whether something's AI generated, and you could just like
And this is you know, let's do two things here. You know, let's reflect on what the actual issue is, like what are we losing here? Mm. And then, you know, I believe in very, very key ways the Church of Jesus Christ is a powerful answer to this issue with what it offers. And it's almost like God knew that this was all going to happen and put his church in place, because this is a church that has preserves these values that, yes, have influenced our culture and all of the commentary on what the problems are often draws from the sort of, you know, Christian values, you know, but the church is this community that preserves values. And so to go back to the first element, you know, the issue really is it's almost, I probably at the risk of using a Marxist term here, it's almost a kind of alienation. I mean, the alienation was the sort of terminology that they were using in the 19th century during the Industrial Revolution, the idea of the average person being alienated from other, you know, it's the guy at the machine is pulling the lever or whatever, and he's alienated from the results of his work, he's alienated from nature, right? Because all the process from the, you know, the extraction of that, of the cotton from the thing to the, you know, machine that's making the, and he's not even make, he doesn't even see the final product. And and actually, you know, I think in some ways that terminology of alienation is valuable, in that it has descriptive power of what is actually happening. It's essentially a sort of gulf between the individual human being and reality, in a sense. It's this gulf that I guess separates us so much from reality. We can no longer cope with reality. It's like, it's almost like a crutch, like a universally applied crutch that we can't live the way that we did before, because we've got these things happening that disable certain things. But here, this is a lot deeper, because this is disabling. We're seeing this already. You mentioned, you know, the result of, you know, smartphones and social media and the different sort of the kind of communications. And that's often called communications kind of technology. Well, it's having an adverse effect on our ability to communicate as human beings. And actually, on the best sort of theological analysis of what is it that makes us human, it's actually our ability to have personal relationship. It's communicate. You know, we are linguistic creatures, and, you know, this interpersonal ability to use language and relate together relationally. There's a great article in the Cambridge Companion to Christian Doctrine by Kevin Van Hooser, who's a leading contemporary theologian, evangelical guy. He writes this great article on human identity, where he identifies on a theological account, really, it's our ability to communicate. It's not just the capacity for language, but what we do with language.
It's the consciousness around
that communication. Yes, that's right. Yes. It's that makes us, you know, we're created. God spoke and the world was. So you have this speaking God right from the start, and then he creates us in our image, and we then name, and we have this. So it's this ability, capacity we have for a certain kind of interpersonal relationship mediated through language that is the essence of our humanity. Now, this stuff is striking right at the heart of that, because it's altering, first of all, the way that we communicate, relate to one another, and then, of course, the way that we relate to, you know, to our environment, because no one knows what's what's true. The sort of the context, our life context is changing because...
Well, we can control our context.
Yeah.
And that this is the thing with this escapism thing, is that I wonder whether all this anxiety and stuff that people are feeling, and whether even if we get beyond anxiety, but people are wanting to escape because they're not happy with their lives and they're looking for something else.
To pleasure, it's that if pain. We think about it. We found a quick way to get from pain, to remove all the things that make us uncomfortable that we don't like, and get to where we're only now seeing and engaging with things we do like.
So I'm able to change the world around me to be able to escape. Where instead of having to confront the issues or the things that are driving that pain, I can escape from it by choosing to design my own context, really, in which to live. And I just wonder whether a lot of this sense of anxiety about life and living is part of the impetus to drive the change. That's it's actually that now existing is part of pushing us in the push us faster and faster into these sort of environments, because it will present itself as an answer. And I think what you're saying too there, Matt, in terms of those relationships and how we communicate, that's part of the development of how we are as humans. You know, it's part of our growth.
How
we grow and how we rubbing against each other and challenging each other and confronting people that we don't like and situations we don't like, and how we deal with it. There's an interesting comment in one of the articles I've been reading, and someone had just put a comment up, and I thought this is not a Christian, obviously, but this is kind of sums up some of that, and that this is what they said. They said, "Boredom is a mystery to me." And the opening lines of this article are quite revealing. "We hate being bored because when we are, we become introspective. Is this what everybody is trying to avoid? Thinking about themselves and their lives and their problems. No wonder we are all such a mess. Avoiding so-called boredom is causing us to lose ourselves. Thinking about ourselves and our lives is a vital human function." This was just someone's observation. And this was I actually talking about, this is in the article itself, was about Apple Vision Pro and the changes that it's and this was one of the first comments that
and they're recognizing, it's interesting there that they're recognizing that this is a vital human function, even from a non-Christian point of view. There's the recognition that introspection and the ability to think about our lives and even reflect on the meaning of our lives and that space for introspection has been taken away, because the problem is when we do have spaces, we're so
uncomfortable.
We're so uncomfortable. We have this, it's like withdrawal symptoms from the, stimulation. And so we're just so, twitchy in those circumstances. We can't really cope with the what I would describe as the contemplative space, which is, from a Christian point of view, which is that is the space where we hear from God, where we reflect on our lives. That is the space where we repent where we have conviction, and the crucial elements of the Christian life are in that space for me, and so the inability to inhabit the contemplative space, I think, is an enormously important, problematic. And the answer isn't just being noisier than the technology, I don't think the church should be anti-technology, and we've got to work with what we've got. And I think the way that Christians have utilized smartphones and to really engage people, all of that's fine,
and to spread the gospel.
Yeah, that's right. And so all of that's great, but at the same time, just being trying to be louder or going through those channels is not enough. We've actually got to try to create spaces where we can preserve those elements.
I think that's
life.
A great segue into where I'd like to go next, because I'm mindful of the time, and we want to. I think it's going to be important for us to talk about, as the church, as individual Christians, how we can be a point of difference in the world. I think one of the comments you made in last episode, Matt, was there's a real opportunity here for the church's light to shine brightly because it is such a contrast to this. I think it's also important to recognize that the research is in around social isolation. So even within our own relationships, there's this element of us engaging with one another and the church being a light. But I think there's also an opportunity for us to reach out to the world who is increasingly being more isolated by this technology, who don't know Jesus is, who don't understand what authentic community is. So much as we can, you know, kind of decide to hunker down, the reality is this creates a huge opportunity for us as a church. Once we know how we're going to deal with it for ourselves, how do we then engage with a world that feels increasingly isolated?
I think being aware of it, we should all be aware of it, because when I'm reading and consuming this information on this particular topic, you know, non-Christians are feeling, especially probably your older, your younger ones are probably hopping on the technology and just think we're all sort of old people, just, you know, don't quite get the tech and so on. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of people asking these questions, like this, that comment that I read out, you know, even people talking about boredom, you know, what, and you read the whole chain of comments under that and people are asking questions like, but, you know, it's, you shouldn't actually be bored. Bored is different than having nothing to do, because coming back to actually being able to contemplate and think, that's often where creativity comes from. When I'm feeling the most bored, I go and I start have the space to actually to create. And what does it even mean to be bored? I mean, what is the definition of bored going to look like in 10 years' time? Is bored, am I bored as soon as I take the goggles off?
I mean, there's opportunity. Like, I think the opportunity here is to create a kind of distinctness that has that effect of light in the darkness. And I think it's important that, you know, because occasionally on some of the stuff that I track with discussions, or, you know, around church and leadership, and, you know, there's a strand of that out there that says, oh, you know, the old getting together in a building thing, you know, it's that's all old school and it's virtual. Let's do virtual church, you know. Now, you know, I think that's moving with the technology too much. Again, we shouldn't be reactionary, and we do need to work with it as well. I think we need to do that. But the opportunity here is to do something that is countercultural and that is unique. And in a way, I mean, you could almost say people need boring spaces. Mm-hmm. Let's create, well, when I say boring spaces, you know, I'm thinking, for example, of something that we do as a church. You know, on first Monday night of every month, we have this thing called the waiting room, which is, you know, which is a space for people to sit in silence. And, you know, and we have a sort of guided reflection that they can follow that helps to, you know, guide them through that. But it's so enormous, isn't it, Stu? It's so enormously counter that, and for some people it's agony. It's, and again, the sort of withdrawal from stimulation, because we are stimulation addicted, and this trajectory, it's like a stronger and stronger drug. And I don't want to be, I don't want to, at the risk of catastrophizing, but I don't think it's an overreach to say this is like going from, you know, light drugs to heavy drugs, in the sense that, you know, this material does have an addictive effect on our minds. We're going to get to the point where we can't cope without. And I'm talking about the stimulation, because boredom is this agitation that we feel in the absence of stimulation. And it's what, you know, people experience when you put them in that room where nothing's happening and sitting in silence. You know, it's the, well, why is it so hard for people to sit in that space for, you know, for an hour? And it's because of the agitation and the absence of stimulation. But I think we need to be leaning into it. It's rather than saying, oh, well, let's not do that. I know that's an extreme, and we've leaned in to create that space. But the other one is just gathering together for the sake of gathering together and being with a diverse array of real human beings in a space.
So I just want to pick up, you know, we talked about technology for church and you know, obviously we're talking about streaming church services and stuff. And I agree with you, there's a balance in that. But I think the technology largely, if we stay out of the military realm just for the time being, is largely just about making life more convenient for us. Well, you know what? It wasn't convenient for Jesus to die on the cross.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this element of, oh, it's just convenient for me to sit in my lounge room and watch church on TV, that's actually not what it's about. It's not about convenience.
Yeah.
It's actually about sacrifice. And I think churches generally, from what I've heard post-COVID, when people did get used to just sitting around at home and that sort of stuff, trying to get people to engage in serving in church ministries now is increasingly difficult because it's around when it's convenient for them, you know? And to me, I feel like whether it's attending church, whether it's serving at church, whether it's finding that time of reflection and putting it aside, it's not about convenience. It's actually about discipline.
Yeah.
It's about sacrifice.
But that's a great comment, Stu, because it's interesting to note how oriented we are towards convenience. Like, it can be a deal breaker. Mm. I mean, you know, even dealing with things like, you know, we say things like, well, if people can't easily find a seat at church, if they can't conveniently and immediately find a seat, they won't come back.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, compare that to the early church where they, you know, they would get up before dawn and go to the catacombs and sort of freezing in the catacombs. And I mean, talk about convenience. You know, it was because, you know, it was an act of worship, which meant the greater the sacrifice,
totally,
the more meaningful it actually was. We've sort of moved away from that in this convenience culture.
And I think to some degree we've conditioned people within the church. I mean, I've heard comments where if there isn't tea and coffee after church because there isn't a team or whatever, it's like that's more important than the fact that you just came and heard a great message and were able to worship together. Well, hang on, there's no tea or coffee. There's no cafe. It's like, hang on, is that why you came to church? You know, it's like, now I know those are add value, but they should only ever be adding value. Mm. They shouldn't be the deal breaker about whether we come or whether we don't come.
I think this is where we're wanting to get to, I think, in this discussion about, it's not when I mean discussion about technology and AI and things like that, but I think it's this is where we need to, all of us, whether we're interested in that or not, need to start to become a lot more aware and in tune with those changes that are happening, because they are affecting us. I can look in my own life and I can look in our own church, you know, how we react and how we respond to church, you know, that convenience thing. We come to church, we kind of expect to be entertained on some level. Like, we don't want to sit through a boring church service. Mm. We want to be, and I'm not.
Yeah,
even,
we don't. It's got to not be boring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't even hear me saying church, there shouldn't be any entertainment in church, because making any of those statements is far more nuanced than that. But it's kind of like, if it's not the way I want it on my terms, I want to make it easy for myself and serving in church. It's got to suit me. It can't, it can't take away my income, or take away family time.
Well, I'm not willing to sacrifice for it.
I can't sacrifice.
Yeah, I'm not willing to sacrifice.
I mean, I think there's a bigger discussion that we need to have in another episode, because I do think, you know, ultimately where we want to get to with this discussion is to think about what is the remedy. Mm-hmm. That word remedy, I think, is important here, because I think the church is actually a remedy to this, because the problem will become so big and is becoming so big that the church has to have
a strategy
and be an actual remedy, a counter to what's happening.
Yeah.
And from what I'm seeing, the discussion around this stuff from the Christian side, as I said right at the start, we're not really sure what to make of it. And so this is where I think we need to make something of it. We all need to be aware of it. And we're being now positioned. The great opportunity is actually to be positioned to be a remedy for what is happening.
Yeah.
And a very clear distinction and a point of difference. We have to be.
Yeah.
Answering.
Well, let me suggest a start, because one of the, perhaps another way of putting what we've talked about is that in a sense, a lot of this sort of technology essentially pushes us into a passive relationship with, well, certainly with what we're being entertained. A lot of the entertainment provides for a very passive, so we're not active, we're not as active and creative in the way that we engage with a lot of this material. So, you know, films have to get more sensational and you have to keep upping the antes to stop people from getting bored and walking out of the theatre, right? You know, the art of being active, of engaging actively and doing that intentionally, I think is something that we need to continue to promote. So, you know, so for example, if we're always concerned about being bored and whatever, I mean, like the reading and reflecting on the Bible you can't do that passively. You've got to have this active sort of engagement, mm-hmm. intentional, and, you know, to really engage with a sermon, what does this mean for, you know, and there's, you know, commentary around culture and preaching, a lot of commentary around this and, you know, this pressure on preachers, you know, to keep people's attention and you know, great preachers who are faithfully preaching the word, but because they don't have the ability to hold an audience, mm-hmm. of you know, a very sort of passive audience and draw them into an active posture, you know, that becomes difficult as well. But you know, I would suggest actually there's a challenge there for the average person that's engaging to come along and saying, I'm going to actively engage first of all with other people. I'm going to actively engage with worship. I think church life provides these opportunities to exercise something. It's increasingly a little bit like going to the gymnasium people go to gym because there's the motivation of the equipment and everything there, and it's
other people around them.
And that's right, and that's a big one, and other people around them. And I think increasingly the church is going to become like a gymnasium for our humanity, for rediscovering the real fundamentals of humanity. And as I've said before, relationship is a big one, in a relationship with a diverse array of people and very direct. And I think one of the essential things about the Christian faith is that promotes vulnerability. Confess your sins to one another, James chapter 5. And of course, there's the right time, the right place, and the right person, you know. Mm-hmm. But think about that. I mean, and the level of vulnerability that actually takes, and what that promotes in terms of a certain depth of relationship within community. And so, you know, things like small groups, getting together and having deep spiritual conversations with an element of, you know, transparency and vulnerability around that. I mean, that is such an important exercise in our humanity.
And let alone just the simple humility that we learn in dealing with people of different personalities.
Yeah, that's right.
And, not just what's right and wrong,
exactly.
Or facts or
anything. So not just people that you want to.
That's right.
It's the difficult person in the group. It's, you know, because again, this is one of the other things, is that people don't know, you know, if there's someone that they don't quite gel with, lost the ability to incorporate people who are different to us. But here's something we should lean into, that not out of that, but actually this is something that's exercising something important about our humanity. And then, you know, even in the bigger church gatherings, the idea of a group of people worshiping together and hearing together and connecting with their common purpose together, there's an incredibly important intangible value. The idea of gathering up your kids, getting them all ready, putting them in the car, driving.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. It's driving a distance. You know, as I often say, the process of getting to church and walking, even before you sit in the door, I think can be more valuable than what happens in the room. Mm. Well, not more valuable, but certainly as valuable. Because it's like the old thing of pilgrimage, you know, where you would go through a lot of inconvenience to make a pilgrimage, because it said something. It said, I'm going to actively engage and sacrifice and go somewhere for a purpose. And so I think that moment of gathering, and then of course leaning into relationships and meeting new people. I mean, these are wonderful opportunities that we have to sort of step out and do things that we don't really get to do.
So in a sense, we're saying, you know, if I can just summarize that, and I think there's a whole other podcast around this conversation.
I think we need to unpack of that stuff because a lot of what you're talking there, you could say, well, I can do that. It's about getting to church or about how interact with. And I think I would like us to actually unpack that a whole lot more to really understand the bigger.
Let's do that in the next podcast. But I just want to pick up on that because I feel like we should be asking ourselves the question. I think the place we're potentially at right now is we're looking for church to create an environment that doesn't cost us anything. And the reality is we should be asking ourselves, what does it cost me to come to church, to be involved in my church? It needs to cost me something. And that means serving sacrificially, not just when it fits in with my other schedule of other things. God can have my spare time.
Mm.
No, I want to make sure God gets my best time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And so I think, you know, if we're finding we might well be serving on a team, but it's just when it's convenient with us. Well, you know, I would ask us to challenge ourselves about where's the sacrifice in that. When we think about the price that Jesus paid. Yeah. We should be willing to see our life in church and our engagement in life groups and whatever else it might be that we're in, that catching up with that person that we find it really difficult to get on with, or those people that are sitting on the fringe and they're awkward to have conversations with. Being intentional about catching up with those people, that's when it starts to cost us something.
Yeah.
And that's when we're investing in the kingdom rather than taking from the kingdom.
Yeah, that's right. And this is where I think we have this opportunity. I really do. I see opportunity. This isn't about saying, oh, it's all doom and gloom. No, I see wonderful time for the kingdom of God, really incarnate as the church in this age, to really be the church. And I'm excited about that. You know, I'm excited about being a Christian in this culture. I mean, it's very countercultural, but I think that's also, you know, we've got to value that as well, because I think as we move forwards, the need for that is going to be really accentuated. It's going to stand out. And I see as we move into this future that the church is really, I think it's increasingly going to come into its own as the light on the hill.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Thrive Perspectives. Our hope is that these discussions will challenge you to look at life from a new perspective. You'll find all our resources at the Thrive Today website, thrivetoday.tv. If there's a topic that you'd like us to discuss, please email us. Our email is contact@thrivetoday.tv. Until next time, our prayer is that you will thrive.